You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, sweettea.com. You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Guys, it is a post-Classico Monday, and I've got Ben, the soccer goose, with me. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing pretty darn good, all things considered. It's been a kind of an up-and-down soccer weekend for my fandom, but doing good. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing fantastic. Still riding a little bit of a high of the weekend. So, Ben, how was the Classico for you? Guys, obviously, it was a 2-2 draw in the long run. It was kind of a tale of two halves, that's for sure. Yeah. Asheville City went up 2-0 before the half. There was an extended half, and then Greenville pulled two back in the second half for a 2-2 draw. Let's start kind of all the way back at the beginning, Ben. How did you think the weekend was going to go when you initially got down there to Greenville?
To be honest with you, based on the forecast and just other things about the match, I was pretty nervous, to be honest with you. I was nervous about the weather. I was nervous about the venue change for Greenville FC. I was nervous about Asheville playing y'all. I mean, I listened to your podcast a few times and just I was nervous to see how the game was going to go and just overall game day and if we were even going to play at all. So the fact that we weren't able to play was a huge bonus. And really just the longer the day went on, the more, I guess, relieved and comfortable I felt about the whole situation, which is a good thing to feel after not maybe a tension, but a little bit of an anxiousness, I guess you could say, about the whole thing.
That's a fantastic way to describe it. So, guys, I don't know if you came to the game. If you did, that's awesome. I don't know if you watched it on the stream. But everything kind of leading up to the game was certainly fraught. We had the women's game on Friday night, and with just the murmurs and kind of the hushed tones around the stadium, we're all about the Classico game. The radars and the weather predictions for Greenville just were horrendous. It was over an inch of rain was predicted starting at 10 in the morning and not finishing until almost midnight. It obviously was Greenville's first game in their new stadium, a Classico. They were coming in with 3 points. 6 points would have, you know, put a massive gap between them and Asheville and Georgia and some of the other clubs. The club itself had a lot riding on that game. So in the long run, they certainly made the right choice. They waited. Us in Asheville, we didn't know if we were traveling down. I kind of wish I had made a decision earlier. It's so close. I always forget to remind myself that. I should have just went ahead and come down, and if it got rained out, you know, take the piece of cake, hour and 15-minute drive home, basically. But we kind of dawdled. We him and hawed. I think about 11, we finally got the go-ahead. Game was going to happen. Everybody kind of ran in their different directions, getting tailgate stuff ready. And we eventually got down there, and we were super excited. But before we actually, I guess, we've got a few, like, infrastructure things I want to chat with you about. But it was so refreshing to be at an NPSL game and have actual tailgating again. Not something we do in Asheville for a variety of reasons. One, we don't really have the space. Two, it's just extremely hard to organize anything like that with our proximity to downtown and our wonderful options for restaurants and beer, that sort of thing. Nobody really wants to kind of come together and eat hot dogs and beer out of a cooler. I don't quite understand it, but that's kind of the mindset. So the Milltown operatives just bent over backwards for us. I could not have been more pleased. I was texting with one of their, not managers, one of their leaderships, and was just thanking them for the hospitality. It was just absolutely fantastic. If Chattanooga is kind of the barometer that we all kind of use to how we are faring, I think that's probably my favorite away game I've had since being a Nashville City fan. So cheers to MTO. Ben, what did you think of Serene?
I really liked it. Like I kind of alluded to, I was nervous based on the fact that Furman's Eugene Stone Stadium was really an ideal location for any club, let alone an NBSL club. But it was a really nice pitch. It was a really nice facility, and you really couldn't ask for much more. So as much as I was excited about the move downtown, and I was a little nervous to compare it to that and how it may compare it overall. But Serene, I really enjoyed because primarily it felt like important games and matches of different quality of sports and different things like that had happened there. You could tell that it's an older facility, but really it was a different atmosphere, but one I think will really suit them well because it doesn't feel like you're playing on like a high school football pitch, which is technically is in a way, but we didn't have the football lines. Pitch quality looked pretty darn good, especially considering the weather that we had that day. And really just the atmosphere was fantastic. I have to give it up to South Slope Blues because they were cheering and chanting and wailing all night long, basically. And I really got to give it to y'all too, because I don't know what it is, but y'all have, I think, the best rhythm I've heard in any supporters group. Like the sheer amount of, it just sounds like you're practicing like 3 days a week and that kind of thing. So that added to it as well, I'll have to admit, just having that opposing supporter group there. It felt like home too, is what I'll say. It felt like a place it'll be a really fun atmosphere to watch games overall. It was, as some people know, it's a bigger venue in the sense that I think it can hold up to 10,000 roughly. As you know, Tim, those steps, they kind of just feel like they go on forever. and that was a different thing too that I wasn't used to as well. But it really feels like a fortress as well, because the way it's built, I think the sound reverberates. Mm-hmm. I was really pleasantly surprised with everything, because when I walked in there, I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest with you. I hadn't been there before for any other type of a match or event or anything like that. And my biggest takeaway from it was it's really cool to see anyone really, but especially Greenville FC, take on that mantle of the history that's at Serene and really just revitalize something that isn't being used in the community.
I agree with all that. It really took me by surprise. It's another one of those stadiums that you can find pictures of online, but they definitely do not do it justice compared to being there in person. I don't think you get the scope and the depth of one of the only things I can think to compare it to, really, on a miniature scale, of course, is the stadium that the Sounders play in, that the Seattle Seahawks play in. It has that kind of like concaved, just like you said, when you're screaming across the pitch, it almost hits those stands and then comes back at you. I can only imagine what it's like having sporting events there where both sides kind of, are being shouted back and forth. I love the location. I think the location is, I think it's going to be an amazing addition to downtown Greenville. I know you'll only, unfortunately, because of the short league schedule this year with only six teams in the league, unfortunately, plus the one friendly for the Tri-City Otters, there's not going to be quite as many games this year for them to play in that stadium. But I fully expect most, if not all, the games to be very, very close to what attendance was last year. I think you guys averaged 1,800, 1,900 last year up at Furman. Just ease of transportation and walking and foot traffic. And if I'm not mistaken, Falls Park was right around the corner. Did I have that right?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just, I guess, adjacent, you could say, from the downtown core. Mm-hmm. But really, all things considered, it's like another attraction to downtown, I would say. It's not right on the strip, I would say, because the downtown area of Greenville is pretty a small radius. but it was I just can't think of a negative to it too. I mean, the only thing I will say is that we weren't able to do the alcohol sales, unfortunately. But even then, the people that I had heard were maybe disappointed about that. It wasn't a major point of, oh, well, they don't have alcohol sales, I don't know if I'm going to come back type of a thing. Or it wasn't a major sticking point for a negativity, I would say. And all things considered, it really exceeded my expectations, going on what you said, because you see pictures online, you see this, you see that. But it just felt like it's been lived in. It felt like a place that you can really build upon and set a foundation for a club in, I would say. Is the other thing I'll say too with it. It just felt really special.
Yeah, the alcohol sales, I mean, just being from Asheville, obviously, that's something that's one of the first things that always pops up on my mind. But I think I'm starting to realize that maybe part of that opinion for me is based on us not doing tailgating. And so much of our tailgating is actually done, for lack of a better way to describe it, almost during the game. You know, whether you're just down in South Slope grabbing a few beers before the game and then coming up right at kickoff, or, I mean, the beers inside our own stadium are so reasonably priced at $4, $5, $6, depending on what you get. You're almost tailgating within the stadium. And I actually prefer to do that also, because I know the way that the sales are structured, we're actually helping the club. You know, if you're down in South Slope and you're buying beers at Arisco or Green Man, guys, those are great organizations, great businesses. Please do support them. But on game day, if we're there to support Asheville City, then coming into the stadium and actually buying those beers from 6 to 7, enjoying the atmosphere, you know, watching the team warm up, that's kind of important to me too. So, but with a proper tailgate like Greenville provided in the parking lot, I mean, right outside the front gate, you don't even necessarily need the beer sales inside. Food, I didn't buy any of the food, but everybody around me who had it inside the stadium enjoyed it. During halftime, they do allow you to walk back out to the parking lot. I don't know if that was specifically just because of the weather today, but I can't imagine they're not going to let you out and then let you back in. I definitely don't think that should be a sticking point to anybody who was concerned or thinking about not coming back specifically for that. The one thing that was very visually disorienting to me was the, I don't know how to describe it, the hump in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, was that at the center pitch? I don't know if I quite noticed that. I know there was, it's definitely, I wouldn't call it a flat pitch. I wouldn't go as far as to say that. That'd be misleading. Yeah,
and maybe hump isn't the right way to describe it. Russell of the MTO described it to me. He's like, oh, it's just a football pitch. And I've watched football. I've watched football longer than I've been watching soccer, and I don't know that I've ever noticed a football pitch that was rounded off quite as much. I don't know that it necessarily affected the on-pitch performance by either team that much. I'm sure when I get to talk to some of the boys maybe on Thursday, I can ask them if it affected them in any way. I would imagine eventually the weather probably affected them a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But visually, it was very strange, kind of almost like watching feet and shins occasionally come up and below almost like a horizon as I got a little bit closer to level on one side of the pitch and then watching it kind of go over to the other. Whenever I was standing at the top of the stands, I couldn't even hardly tell. So, but let's talk a little bit about on the pitch and kind of what happened throughout the course of the game. So, but kind of my perspective on it, at least for the first about, I would say about 15, 20 minutes. I don't know that either team really particularly was covering themselves in glory. I think Asheville came out extremely flat-footed. I was a little confused by the keeper continuously choosing to kick the ball long. In almost every scenario that he put his hands on the ball eventually ended up going back over the halfway line, which just inevitably, it was very hard. I know the Greenville two starting CBs had not played it the week before against Georgia. This was their first game with the squad. But I mean, they just, between the two of them, they would man mark the forward, and eventually Paul Tyson would end up with the ball in his hands, and then he would kick it long. Inevitably, he would kick it out of bounds. It actually became a chant about three quarters of the way through the game. But I don't feel like anybody really had control of the game. If anything, I actually feel like Greenville probably had a bit more possession and was actually able to kind of get through our midfield a little bit. But then inevitably, the back line, both Marcos and Jamie, just were kind of snuffing out any attempt at goal. And then Asheville struck twice in quick succession, I think in the 29th minute off of a header, and then about 90 seconds later, 1 minute later, off of another header. And that kind of swung things for a little bit, and then the skies open. But was there anything in that first half that caught your attention? Do you think another thing we didn't really mention about Serene is that the pitch itself is, I think, 10 yards maybe 10 feet, 10 yards narrower than most other soccer pitches. Do you think that affected kind of the flow of the game or the ability to maintain possession?
I think it definitely could have. I think, as you said, both teams kind of didn't have their feet underneath them to start the match. And it was interesting to see the ball. It was just kind of going all over the place, to be honest with you. There wasn't as much distinct possession going on, I would say. But really, Asheville did. It was interesting. This is going to be my biased opinion, I'll admit. But it was interesting to see that the two goals that Asheville did get about the pretty early on in the, well, later in the second half, or the first half, I should say. But it was interesting because it just felt like it was a really good play by Asheville City. Like they put in a perfect pinpoint cross to the far post, and unfortunately we just didn't mark the man. But I will say that Asheville did a really good job of attacking via the wings, and Benito, it may have been just because he was right in front of me on that side of the pitch, Benito really stood out to me to be a impact attacking player that was, quite frankly, causing Greenville FC fits. Just with his ability to, once Asheville kind of got their feet underneath them and were figuring out the Greenville defense, it felt like he was a major contributor to that attack and distributing and getting around defenders and things like that. He was really a standout player, I think, for Asheville City. It was interesting to see him flip sides. I noticed that, I think, before the first half ended, he switched over to the right side where he started on the left side, I believe. But he was a really quality player. I think he was number 17, if I'm not mistaken. But it was really interesting to see that transpire. And I was honestly really concerned because the goals that Asheville did score, it kind of felt like it'd be really difficult to game plan against that type of a mentality, because they were attacking via the wings, and then when you get that nice of a cross in and everyone's kind of shuffling around and figuring out where things are, I feel like that would be hard to game plan against. And I think the extended halftime probably worked in their favor, to be honest with you. Sometimes halftime can't come soon enough, and I think that contributed to Greenville's success in the second half, I would think.
I completely agree with all of that. Both goals, I wouldn't go as far to say they came against the run of play, but one with just an inch perfect cross, and then the other coming from a free kick or a corner. I think it was a corner. They certainly, I think you described them extremely well. They weren't necessarily like they cut up the Greenville defense and were masterpiece midfield work, you know, breaking the lines and moving into space. They just were both very, very well placed crosses into headers who found space kind of in the box. So honestly, at halftime, I felt ridiculously happy to have, again, kind of played poorly, but been up 2-0, feeling like if we could keep up that momentum and knowing that Greenville had to chase goals, that we could actually start to sit back. We played Nashville on Tuesday in a game that if we end up not making the playoffs, or if we end up as the 4 seed as opposed to a 2 seed, or the 4 seed as opposed to a 3 seed, and we look at dropped points, it's going to be that Nashville game that I think every last one of us is just going to be heartbroken about. It was a free kick right outside the box, like another 8 yards in front of the penalty spot, basically outside the box. They set up the wall. We did. Nashville kicked it under the wall. Our keeper went to trap it, and it just literally bounced right off of his palms into a trailing poacher who just like poked it into the corner. It was absolutely ridiculous. We had no business losing that game. We probably should have won it, but certainly we deserved at least 1 point. You're Smarter Than Us is brought to you in part by Tasty Beverage Company, a beer store and bar on Asheville's South Slope. In addition to featuring a world-class selection of local, regional, imported craft beer, Tasty also carries a selection of specialty beverages like natural wine, cider, and craft sodas. This year, Tasty will be showing Asheville City away games all season long, so go visit them at 162 Cox Avenue across from Swannanoa Cleaners, and make sure to let them know we sent you. So going into that second half, or I guess 45 minutes came, I think there was like an extra 1 or 2 minutes of added time, and the skies just opened up. I was listening to Amateur Hour earlier, and Ben, you again absolutely nailed it, how maybe about the 35th minute that you could almost feel the weather change. It wasn't an issue of just the rain coming, but it was an honest issue of the temperature dropping, it getting, you know, physically darker just because of the cloud cover, wind picked up, and then right at 45 minutes the skies just absolutely opened, a couple thunder claps. They played we actually got the added time in, and then we had no idea. Everything we were talking about going back out to the parking lot was what happens if they call the game? Do you replay the second half before the second leg? Are we expected to come back down here on a totally another day and play the second half? Some of us went to pizza restaurants and ordered pizza and wings.
Yeah, some of us learned lessons, that's for sure. Never assume you know what Mother Nature is going to do, because Mother Nature will make you a fool every time it does it.
Well, another thing, I would have assumed you would have had all the time in the world, because I was being told by multiple people who obviously were not telling each other this, so I'm assuming it was just kind of an understood rule that every time lightning struck within, 5 miles or whatever it was, it reset the clock and basically meant another 30 minutes of half. So
yeah, I've heard that too. To be honest with you, strike
and went, okay, cool. I think
there's
half an hour.
Some type of there must be some type of a way to interpret that rule, because I've been at other games and there's no way that there wasn't multiple strikes that just continued to delay the game. And I'm curious what the actual ruling on that type of a weather situation is, because I've definitely heard it interpreted that way before, but I've seen it done completely different, like we saw in a way on Saturday night.
I'm assuming it's a ref decision. I don't know if because of what the NPSL is and how we, aren't necessarily governed by certain, sanctioned rules and everything. Maybe it's just a referee decision and they can use their best judgment for radars and timing. And it doesn't have to be one flat rule that you're kind of judging everything from Florida to Oklahoma to California. And there's a little room for interpretation. But sure enough, we did start the second half. I don't think there was any changes at half. It definitely was a longer half. I don't think it was quite half an hour, maybe close to it, 25 minutes. You had just ordered your pizza and beer and wings about five minutes before the kickoff.
Yeah, I will say there was one change as far as personnel goes for Greenville FC. There was it's an interesting player of ours because he played for us last year, and he returned this year, of course. But the guy's name is David Kaprowski. He played center back for us 3/4 of the year last year. He was a good center back too. He's, I want to say, 6'3", 6'4". He's taller than me. I know that, and I'm not a short individual. You probably recognize him too because he's got the curly hair he puts back in a man bun to keep under wraps. But he came on, I think, at the start of the second half, and he has kind of transitioned into a forward role for us. I think he had played it. If I remember right, he played that position against Astral City last year as well. So I was interested to see that. When I was waiting for my pizza, I saw that a change had happened, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. We're gonna test this out again. And I think he scored pretty quickly after the second half started. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I wasn't there, unfortunately. But
No, I think you're absolutely correct. It happened extremely quickly. I want to say maybe the 48th minute. I can pull it up right here, but it definitely caught me by surprise. I was really, really convinced that we were just going to sit back and kind of absorb, knowing that Greenville was going to have to chase a goal. That 48th minute. Knowing that they were going to have to chase a goal, and especially now that the pitch was soaking wet, like not like Asheville, it rained at 5 o'clock and stopped at 7, and we had to bring the push brooms out and, you know, push the water off the pitch. Like, I mean, it was still actively downpouring. I was watching balls like skirt across the pitch and dive 5-10 yards before their intended target. So I was expecting Asheville to sit back, and I, you know, 3 minutes into the half, that was extremely, extremely frustrating. When did you actually get back to the stadium?
I think I got there right before the 70th minute, I believe. I know there's a good portion of the second half I was able to witness, luckily. And when I got there, I didn't know quite what to expect, because I know we had pulled the goal back. But still obviously needed one to get level. And it seemed to be that the game was still pretty back and forth, surprisingly. I mean, like you said, I would kind of assume that Asheville would have kind of played back and absorbed the pressure, but it was still a pretty open game when I stumbled into the stadium with pizza in hand, luckily. I tried to like hide it behind my back when I walked in, because I wasn't sure if I was supposed to bring that in. But at that point, I was bringing it in, and luckily I was able to. But what did you think as far as, I guess, that second half of the second half portion of the match?
It caught me by surprise, because I think I was expecting the same thing. Again, like, oh, wow, okay, we let up a goal, now just like a double, you know, play back. Everything was going against Greenville. They were having a chase. Wet pitch, which totally negated their speed on the wings. I thought Asheville's players played very heroically, for a lack of a better term, in terms of when they were pressed and the pressure was kind of on them playing, when they were having to play out of the back. I don't know that, especially at this level, I've ever seen so many successful tackles. It really surprised me. I don't know if it was an issue of, again, the pitch being so wet and the almost having to lose a step trying to move the ball forwards, whether it be because of your own feet not being able to kind of pitter-patter as fast as you want, or if you're just having to be so deliberate and watch, you know, every touch of the ball. But there was people, I think there was like 1 3-minute stretch where the ball probably didn't leave the midfield. It was just kind of getting advanced, you know, 30 yards, tackle, you know, advanced in the opposite direction, 30 yards, tackle, 30 yards, 30 yards, 30 yards. It was pretty phenomenal to watch. I still felt pretty confident. It was definitely a situation of Greenville asking a lot more questions than Asheville was. And then in the 81st minute, Jack Shields ties it up in the 81st minute. And then from there, I think kind of the last half of the game just was what it was. Asheville had one absolutely beautiful chance. I think it was Lucas Joyner on the right wing put in a curler. No, it wasn't Lucas. Either Nathan Watt or another one of our midfielders put in a just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous curler that, I mean, just it cleared Paul, but also cleared the bar, unfortunately, and didn't go in. I think there was only 1, maybe 2 minutes of stoppage time, which I was a little surprised by, and that was that. So I forgot to mention this, though, and you weren't there, but I didn't know if you heard anything about it once you got there. Did anybody in the MTO tell you about the controversy around the first Greenville goal?
No, I hadn't quite heard about it at all, to be honest with you.
So I'm not 100% sure what happened, because I watched the goal go in, but the Asheville bench just went just went absolutely crazy as soon as the goal went in. It was from a dead ball free kick situation that wasn't a, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was almost like a short corner from a free kick that then got crossed in and then got put in. But apparently there was a second ball on the pitch that had not been cleared off the pitch yet. And so it was still actually being moved off the pitch when they took the free kick. And I don't know if the insinuation was that Greenville or Asheville was waiting on that ball to get set. I don't know if the whistle had already been blown or if the ref himself had not seen that second ball on the pitch. I do just the Asheville bench and Coach Mick specifically just absolutely lost his mind. Absolutely lost his mind. He's a fairly put together, well-spoken, and calm man. And I made the point at one point after half, I'm sure you had no problem bringing your pizza in, because the 75 people that came back into the stadium after half probably did not care. I think you told me you heard the attendance was like 800 or something like that.
That is what I heard, yeah.
Well, after half, it was definitely, what would you say, 200 max, max?
Yeah, I would think it was somewhere between about 100 and 200, let's say.
Yeah. So with that reduction in numbers, it was very strange to be able to hear a pin drop in that stadium, especially after the first half. So it was doubly funny to, not funny, but strange to be able to hear Coach Mick and literally every word he was saying on the pitch.
Yeah.
He had some choice
it's
words.
It's funny. I've had after other that. Opportunities to be at a rain delay game or a thunderstorm delay game. That game, I don't think I'd done until almost midnight. So you know how long that was delayed, but it was a very similar situation where you could hear the players talking to each other. Mm-hmm. You could hear almost everything, maybe too much in some ways, but it's always interesting when that happens, because you almost wonder from a player perspective if like they know that everyone can hear them talking and just everything going on at once.
Mm-hmm. So the game ended 2-2 draw. I was very impressed. We only had, if I'm thinking of this right, I think we only had two players from last year's Classico play in this year's Classico. I guess three if you include Watt coming on, but only two starters. So if you were mentioning the guy with the man bun, the end of the Classico game in Asheville last year, which was the second leg, got extremely chippy. And him and Jamie Smith were two of the individuals right at the epicenter of that chippiness. There was an issue of a ball getting knocked out of somebody's hand, some time wasting, somebody getting shoved. And so I was wondering if there was going to be any kind of reciprocation of that or any hard feelings kind of brought forward. But I was actually kind of impressed. It seemed like the players, after last year's I guess the Asheville game was actually the first leg and the 4th of July game was the second leg. But after two chippy, hard-fought games, it seemed like everything this year was a little more copacetic. And while it was still a rivalry game and still extremely hard-fought, there didn't seem to be much animosity. And especially at the end of the game, it seemed like everybody was kind of leaving on good terms. So the first leg's a draw. The keg of the Covenant stays with the Milltown operatives for at least another month. What was your impression, and what did you hear kind of around tailgate and in the supporter section about the keg of the Covenant?
I tell you, man, it was really cool to see it in person too, because I'd seen the photos online and everything, but it was really well put together. It's exactly as advertised. It's a keg, I guess, spray painted gold with supporter colored or club colored poles on either side for the two clubs involved. But it's just really cool to see that come to fruition, almost essentially, and really just because the two supporters groups have mutual admiration for each other, mutual respect, I should say. It's interesting, and I'll tell you this story too, because there was a guy visiting Greenville that's from Atlanta. And it, as some people may know, Atlanta and Orlando City, Atlanta United and Orlando City were playing an MLS match that same weekend. He was an Atlanta United supporter, and he's like, so is this rivalry like Atlanta United and Orlando City? Like, should I be worried about the Asheville City fans coming here? And I'm like, not at all. It's really cool to see that rivalry just be about, of course, not during the 90 minutes, but outside of those 90 minutes, we're just a bunch of friends hanging out, essentially. And it's nice to have that camaraderie that you don't see in other rivalries, unfortunately. I've always taken the stance that I don't get the animosity back and forth. Of course, there's exceptions to everything, just based on certain fan groups and divisions of fan groups and things like that. But it really makes me happy to see two supporters groups come together like that and have a unified tailgate and a unified trophy, to have that mutual camaraderie in a physical item. It was really cool to see in person.
So if you guys haven't seen it yet, make sure to check out the South Slope Blues and Milltown Operatives Twitter feeds, and I believe it's on Instagram also. But basically what the Keg of the Covenant has kind of come to manifest, and you know, basically manifest, is this concept of a handshake agreement, a shared philosophy, a covenant of support between the South Slope Blues and the Milltown Operatives. We play in a sandbox and in a landscape that we're not an island unto ourselves. We haven't been around either one of our clubs. We haven't been around as long as Chattanooga Football Club, and we don't have the kind of cachet that they bring with them. We played literally geographically in kind of an oasis. I know when Asheville City joined, there was actually a little bit of dithers about where they were going to be. Were they going to end up in the Southeast, or were they going to end up in, I think, the South Atlantic, which is where Virginia Beach and those clubs play up in that direction. I don't necessarily think travel would have been any better or any worse. I mean, Virginia Beach, Norfolk is a ways away, but certainly isn't much, much further away than New Orleans was last year. But, you know, Greenville's kind of in there, I mean, I guess outside of Atlanta. But, you know, guys, if things go sideways, we kind of spoke about this a little bit with Coach Mick last week, off mic, I believe, actually. I don't know that it made the podcast. But what does the future portend if Chattanooga moves up and doesn't have a reserve squad? What if the Silverbacks, what used to be the Silverbacks, don't really, you know, do extremely well, and maybe they don't have the investments? Who knows what happens with the Georgia Revs? They're doing extremely well, but their reserve and adult sides do possibly even better than their NPSL side. So Greenville and Asheville, for all intents and purposes, truly, truly are in this together. For our men to succeed, Greenville's men need to succeed. And I think there was a little bit of appreciation. I know in Greenville, there's certainly a belief that soccer ecosystem can support two teams, both Greenville FC and the Triumph. I think I'm taking a step back, at least for the rest of the season, on if that's going to work or not. I have my beliefs, but that we'll see what happens at the end of the season. But I definitely know that in Asheville, at least, that we, when that all happened, we, you know, except for Cameron Saul and Dominic signing with the Triumph, we are no fan favorites, or we don't show any favoritism towards the USL. We are in the NPSL for a reason, not USL League 2. Not to say that USL could never happen for Asheville City. I'm not part of the ownership. My preference would be that it wouldn't, and I'll eat a lot of crow if I end up having to choose club over league in that situation. But we definitely want Greenville to succeed. We need the Milltown Operatives to succeed, to continue to exist in the NPSL sandbox, to continue to exist in the Southeast specifically. So when we were working with the MTO over the off season, and there was kind of a change in leadership at the top of that, and the Celso Blues gained some leadership, there was definitely a recognition and offer of support to each other. And I had somebody describe it to me, and I thought this was, you know, really, really, really well put, that what Greenville and Asheville has become is kind of, you know, two best friends who kind of play FIFA together. You know, the competitiveness will never not be at 100%. There's always going to be bragging rights. But chances are you were at the bar before you went back to play FIFA. And chances are after you turn off the PlayStation, you guys are going to go grab a piece of pizza and another beer together. What happens during those 90 minutes is what happens during those 90 minutes. But outside of that, we really, truly are best friends. And I love that, because that's not the same thing as you get with, you know, for example, NCFC and the Charlotte Independents. So I long may that continue. I wish Greenville all the luck. I hope we bring back that keg in the Covenant on the second leg. And I hope Greenville makes the playoffs. And I hope we beat Greenville in the playoffs.
Hey, if we can get a third matchup,
was there any other observations or anything?
No, I think that really does put a nice bow on everything. And I think it was really cool and exciting to see the second chapter of Greenville FC real and live in person, and see the transition to Serene Stadium come to fruition, and really done excellently as well. I mean, all things considered, with that rain delay and the impending forecast and everything, it was really done well. And I got to tip my cap to Marco and the entire Greenville FC group for being able to do that, and really just sticking to their guns and letting that match play out, because there's another scenario out there where we don't play that match and we play it in, say, 2 weeks or so. And I like this scenario a lot more than that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it would have ended up on a weekday, on like a Wednesday in a couple weeks. And I'm sure half of us who made it down from Asheville wouldn't have been able to make it. It would have been schedule congestion for both sides. It certainly would not have been ideal. Well, Ben, thanks so much. I very much appreciate you hopping on. Maybe let's touch base after or before the next Classico. Been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at youre_smarter.